Welcome back to another episode of In a Perfect World. Yes, here we are again. This is Rakrazam, your host. This is the ninth year of this podcast, and I'm really pleased both to be doing it, you know, and to be getting some good information out to the general community. But secretly, you know, the reason I do this podcast is I love connecting to people and to good people with interesting stories and that are contributing to the flowering of both the shamanic paradigm and the psychedelic paradigm and this work that is being done. And so it is my great pleasure to introduce my guest this month, who is the amazing Tara Rose. Hi, Tara.
Hi, Rock. I'm so excited to be on your podcast. I'm a big fan.
Fantastic. So I first connected with you at the recent Exploring Psychedelics conference in Ashland back in May. And I managed to catch, amongst all the tumultuous activity, I managed to catch a little bit of your talk, which I really liked. It was about cleansing the ego with entheogens. And so that really piqued my interest up, because I think that's one of the key things that all of us, including myself, need to look at, which is how we walk that path of working with these medicines, and also how we integrate that and how we deal with this great gift which nature has given us, which is the ego, but also how to put that ego in right relationship with the path.
Yes, I love that.
What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I think it's so important, as you said, to integrate what we learn when we get to sit with those wonderful teachers, the medicine. And for me, my path really started to unfold with the entheogens after I had a particularly powerful experience in a two-night ayahuasca ceremony. And in this two-night ceremony, I was shown a dramatic contrast between what my perception of myself and relationship is like to others when I'm in my ego versus when I'm really completely in service and in deep connection with Source, with the energy of the benevolent, omniscient, omnipotent force that guides all things. And that experience is something that I've been reflecting on for years and been integrating for years. In particular, I got this really powerful message from the plant to love everybody, forgive everybody, and don't complain. And I spent the first night very much experiencing my ego, which wasn't fun. I was really in a lot of resistance to surrendering and submitting to the medicine, but part of me really wanted to. And so I had this inner battle going on, which was really very interesting. I just kept asking the plant spirit to take over. And the second night, it was like the battle had been won. And I was just completely in with the medicine, one with the medicine. And I got to experience being fully in my heart space and experiencing telepathy with the facilitators, samadhi state, just a really different experience. I got to see what it's like to not be in my ego completely. And ever since then, I've been looking at how I can integrate that and live more in that second way. Because I got to see that when I was doing that, when I was really in my heart space, I was actually affecting the rest of the group with the different energy vibrations and frequencies that I was holding. I was seeing the effect on the rest of the people in the ceremony and the ceremony itself. It was really very powerful. And so I got to see, wow, this is how I can help and this is how I can serve and this is what it looks like.
Yeah, and that's so interesting. Let's get into that group stuff in a minute. Hey, I just wanted to backtrack so I give some more context to your presence. You're a writer and a speaker, you're a media maker, you have your own YouTube channel, the Tara Rose Sacred Medicine page, you're an ex-investigative journalist, and you've written some books, Dandelion Hunter, and you're an intuitive healer. So let's just backtrack a bit. How does someone, I'm always interested in people's journeys of how they come to this medicine, because things like ayahuasca and now cambo and bufo and rape and all these different medicines are more and more present in our alternative cultures in the mainstream, but more and more people are drawn to them, and more people are feeling the power and hopefully also then being of service and helping that integration of these medicines and the perspective they bring into our communities. How did you get involved in this world, Tara?
That's a great question. That's a really excellent question. Synchronicity, I think, is the answer to that. My goals have been, I started out on the healing path, really looking for relief for myself from just experiencing quite a lot of trauma, particularly through childhood and adolescence. And I started off with Reiki, and then cannabis has been an ally for me for a long time. And at a certain point, I wanted to experience ayahuasca, so I listened to what a really, really wonderful teacher said to me, which was, "Don't ever seek it out, call it to you." So I said, "Okay, ayahuasca, come find me." And she did. Through synchronicity, someone invited me to take part in the ceremony. And so that began my relationship with ayahuasca. And then after that really powerful two-night ceremony I mentioned, combo showed up in my world also through synchronicity. I didn't call it in. I wasn't familiar with it. And combo, for anyone that might not be familiar, is the purgative frog medicine from the Amazon, not considered psychoactive.
It's not the Buffalo various toad. That's a completely other medicine.
Right. It's not that at all. No, it's completely different. Right. So what happened was I found myself at a point where I felt this inner call to completely release all of the work that I was doing, meaning, I mean, all of the professional income generating work that I was doing, and just completely let go of it and be still and focus on non-action and allowing for my higher self and allowing for source to simply create through me and draw synchronicity through me so that I could be an expression of my higher self in some way. And at that time, I was on board with this philosophically and really looking to do some physical body purification through diet and cleansing and things like that. And I thought that this would be something where I sat still for a couple of weeks or a month or something, and then synchronicities would just click in and stuff would start to flow. But that isn't what happened. Instead, what happened was I found myself being completely triggered. In my ego, in every way, because the ego, of course, hates vulnerability, hates not being in control, hates not knowing what's next, and especially is concerned with survival. So it was very, very triggered, and I was having difficulty sleeping, and I was just having difficulty trusting. And at the same time, I was going for walks in nature and seeing frogs all the time, which was unusual for where I was walking. And then a colleague who's a healer, offered to give me a combo treatment to help me. And that began my connection with combo and ended up in a year and a half long relationship with combo, where I received it 33 times with the physical medicine and then one time as a spirit medicine. And each time I received this medicine, I would set an intention around purifying my ego. So I would set the intention, for example, to release the desire to control, to release anger, to release jealousy. And what I was finding, and especially grief, I should say, a lot of grief. And what I was finding was that after each combo treatment, which by the way, I would seek out only when I saw frogs in some way, either actual frogs or the symbol of the frog somewhere, showing up in this living, waking dream. And each time I would do the combo medicine, I would go from a very triggered state with an overwhelming, intense experience of anxiety and whatever else was up, perhaps depression and so forth, to being really connected to my higher self, experiencing prophetic dreams, synchronicity, lots of messages directly, strong intuition, strong psychic abilities. And it was really interesting. This heightened state would last for about 2 weeks. And then the triggering would begin again, and then the frog medicine would show up again. So this went on for about 18 months, and it's been really interesting.
Wow. So that's beautiful. I mean, This is so interesting because, like, there's a whole necessary and sort of, in some ways, inevitable integration of psychedelic compounds back into the Western, almost pharmaceutical model or therapeutic model, I guess. And, you know, it's still, in some senses, looking at even when they've done tests like ayahuasca or LSD or psilocybin mushrooms, looking at quantities and mechanistic reductionism of, you know, how substances affect the people, like it's the substance doing all the work, right? But it's this interaction with people and with their own sensitivities and what I believe with their spiritual path, with their journey, with their acceptance, with their awareness. And you know, they've done studies with those medicines I just mentioned with MRI and EEG and looked at the way that the psychoactives reduce the default mode network of the brain, those regional clusters which are involved in helping build up that sense of reality and essentially are filtering down the full spectrum of our consciousness into just one frequency of mainstream sort of 9 to 5 awareness, or at least holding the reality plot together. But you know, there's a whole, for me at least on this path, there's a whole spiritual component to the experiential experience of what you're feeling on the medicines. And this is really part of it. This is especially the entheogens, which are secreted by the planet. You know, they're actually living beings. And you know, in the indigenous cosmovision in Peru, they believe everything has a spirit, and that there's a spirit in ayahuasca, there's a spirit in all the plants. And they say when you take these things as medicine, it's not just that it's the physical neurochemical, what we would call the chemical components that are the medicine. It's the relationship with the spirits in this in the living medicines that you're taking in, the relationship you're forming. And then, you know, what that's doing is it's guiding you, it's listening to you, it's almost like wooing you back into relationship with the planet through the plants. As Terence McKenna used to say, there's a plan involving the plants, you know, which is secreted by the planet. Plan, plant, planet. And it seems to me very apt, you know, and that whether we give ourselves permission to have a spiritual paradigm or a language for that, there is a lot of maps and guidance in different spiritual traditions, which understand on the soul's journey there are phases, and that there were always basically being instructed and guided, whether we realize it or not. And that, you know, there are phases where we're learning to trust and we're learning to open to the experience of the spiritual life, and that there's something bigger than us. There's something bigger that's in control, that there is an active and alive intelligence that is manifested in the planet that we are part of. Or as I like to think of now, we're like one strand within the Gaian biome, you know, that humans are just one strand within all these multiplicity of species which are part of this whole Gaian Gestalt consciousness. And that there's a reason for this, there's a purpose on this path, and it involves essentially this. It involves sacrificing the ego on the altar of trust of that bigger force, you know?
I love that. Yes, absolutely. And you know, one of the really wonderful shamans that I've gotten to sit with ayahuasca says at the end of every ceremony, this ceremony has come to a close, but the ceremony of the rest of your life has just begun.
Oh my God, I
And
love that. I say that too. It's like the ceremony of life continues, you know? And the nuances and the focus and the respect that you give yourself and other people in the ceremony of your medicine, cultivate that, you know, and apply that in every interaction in your life, because that's what it's teaching us. Not just this peak experience of visionary hoo-ha going on, but it's teaching us how to mature as souls, I reckon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love that. And I think it's so important that we are working with these medicines in a respectful way and really trusting and loving the spirits that work on us through them as intelligent and benevolent and wise. And I think it's so important. Personally, I don't like to work with any medicine without being very strongly and clearly called to work with that particular medicine at that particular time. I know of people who are wonderful people who will just do lots and lots of ceremonies with particular medicines without necessarily really checking in. Is this what I'm being called to do at this time? And then I've noticed that some of those people don't take all of the benefits of each of those precious ceremonies and each of those precious teachings and apply and integrate. And that's the magic. I mean, that, as you've said, it's not about just the peak experience. It's about applying those teachings and about, I think, being in right relationship with those medicines. So for me, when I'm preparing for any ceremony, I'm going to think for a moment about Aya. You know, I will spend a long time, as long as I know ahead of that ceremony that I'm doing it, making offerings to the plant spirit, preparing myself and setting intentions and singing to the plant to thank her and to come into this deep relationship with her. And with Combo, every time I've sat with Combo, I sit and I thank this medicine for coming up from the Amazon. I thank the frog. And I recognize that these medicines can work, as you said, on such a profound level. We're multidimensional beings. We are not just the mind or the body. We are so much more than that. We are the emotions, we are the heart, and we are spirit. We are our past lives, we are our future lives, we are each other. We're all so connected. And so I think it's really powerful to work with these medicines with from that state of this deep respect. I see them as teachers. I see ayahuasca as an activator and a guru who awards soul missions at times, who activates latent gifts that we wouldn't necessarily activate either without her. For example, I've seen people who were not very good singers become very good singers because ayahuasca gave them that gift. And I've experienced with Combo that it has absolutely opened up my visionary capacities, my intuitive capacities. And I think the reason that it's able to do that is that it's clearing the bandwidth on an energetic level for more connection with source. And I think that's the key. I mean, on one level, everything is, right? Everything is source. It's all
you're
one.
Talking my language. But, totally agree.
But on another level, there's different frequencies of experience and different frequencies of emotion and different frequencies of thought and different realms and different dimensions and so forth. And we want to open ourselves to more of the love frequency and the peace frequency and the compassion frequency and the oneness frequency. And we want to be emitting that and we want to be channels of that. So I feel like Combo is a really incredible medicine for opening that the bandwidth for those frequencies. Because what I've experienced in my journey through receiving all kinds of different healing medicines, that the extent to which I'm in any kind of a solipsist state and thinking it's just me and I have to make things happen and seeing everything is disconnected, that is the extent to which I'm in pain. And as I've healed, as medicines have worked on me, and I've been able to release quite a bit of density, I've really experienced my vibration changing and becoming more aligned with compassion. I've experienced greater empathy. I've experienced greater connectivity, greater intuition. And I think what that is again, is just opening the bandwidth. And I've heard you say on another episode as well, and I totally agree, the ego is made up really of trauma. At least the imbalanced aspects of the ego are made up of trauma, because when we experience trauma, and not just in this lifetime and not even just personally, it can be societally, it can be ancestrally, whatever, we end up in resistance to life. We end up in fear and anger and pain and all kinds of grief and things that wall us off to that frequency, to the source consciousness. So I think working with the medicines is so powerful because it helps us reconnect with that stuff. And cleansing the ego is absolutely essential because, it, as you've said, you know, it's great to get into those peak states. And yes, perhaps there's value simply in just reaching them even once and creating those pathways. But then what? You know, and I think the then what is purification. And I think Combo is a really incredible tool for purification, but certainly not the only one. I work with purification all the time. And I think, you know, it needs to be approached intentionally and proactively on the physical level, meaning through, you know, good diet, healthy diet, not eating junk, taking good care of the physical body, grounding the physical energies, balancing the physical body, the mental level as well, through opening up into more positive thoughts and less thought if possible, and bringing in positive, inspiring content into the mind, like your show. The emotional level, which is healing past traumas and healing just stuck emotions that stay with us, because this might be the thing that I think people maybe need to hear the most, is that you know, analyzing what we've experienced in the past in therapy is great and all, but that's not really the full healing process. The full healing process is releasing the energy of those emotions and reclaiming our connection to ourself and to source. And that's so important, because without doing that work, we're blocked and we're not accessing our full potential. We're not accessing the source consciousness and the frequencies of love and peace and compassion and oneness that are so needed at this time. And I think as well, we need to clear the bandwidth on the spiritual level. And what I mean by that is using our free will in an intentional way to become channels and vehicles for the highest good, for love, for healing, for planetary awakening. And that, I think, I found at least, it's really important to do on an intentional level often. So I've tried to do that. Often I'll do a surrender meditation or make acts, ritual acts of using my free will for that intention. And then in addition to that, I think the purification of the ego involves releasing attachment, which is surrendering to the infinite wisdom of the omniscient, omnipotent force that guides all things. It's grieving when the ego needs to grieve, when the self needs to grieve. It's following synchronicity and following more than anything the inner guidance and really doing the things that we feel like we are meant to be doing. And then in addition to that, it's really looking at that guidance. I think about that ayahuasca had given me that one time: love everybody, forgive everybody, and don't complain. So the way that I approach that, I think that is the prescription for purifying the ego. That is the goal that we want to get at. And so I think the way we love everybody is through full self-acceptance and self-love unconditionally, and going and finding all of the parts of ourselves that need it. I find cannabis an incredible tool for amplifying the shadow aspects of self and for helping with self-love. I think that's really the medicine of cannabis in many ways. Not that it's the only thing it will do or she will do. And then the other piece, forgive everybody. I feel I've personally been approaching through releasing old hurts, old pains, and doing the healing work with intuitive healers, as well as with medicines, my combo. And then the last piece, don't complain, is radical acceptance. So seeing that everything in our lives is serving our path of growth and awakening, seeing all difficulties as intentionally being there for us to trigger. And when I say trigger, I mean for old unresolved emotions to come up and old unresolved limiting beliefs and issues, and even just energy blockages that may not have conscious implications that we're aware of, just allowing all of that to come up and then to be transformed consciously and through intentional work.
Wow. Okay. I'm totally on board with what you're saying. And I'm just trying to think of how we're going to unpack that and go into a little more detail. Let's go back to the start. Now, here's my intuition. I have said it on previous shows, like you mentioned before. This happened to me on a very intense San Pedro journey that I think actually in retrospect had a lot of toad reactivation happening within it. But there was also a lot of like spirits and ancestors and really deep wisdom. But I was on a beach in Costa Rica. I was just melting into the infinite ocean and the oneness and the white light. And this little hermit crab skidded across in front of me. And I don't know, intuitively what happens is I just intuitively get downloads. Like I just get like full sort of, you know, things that come to me. And I was just looking at that little hermit crab and the sort of armoring it had, and riffing off in a millisecond about us, you know, us and the oneness and rejoining that oneness of source, and how we're separated, mm-hmm. and how that wound of separation has it's colored our entire civilization. And it's so endemic and so deep that we indoctrinate every generation in the frequency of, if not the wound, the frequency of the limited consciousness that we inhabit, that we've inherited, and we no longer see it as a limitation, you know? So I wondered, it made me think that all these world religions that have this talk of like a fall from consciousness, or that we previously had some expanded consciousness. Even the indigenous people, like in Australia, say we had a dreamtime consciousness, and that there was some type of operability that seemed like it was more capacity than we have now in this linear consciousness. And, you know, I even see all the psychedelic revolution since the 60s as basically nature or source inserting itself back into the program and trying to bring us back to the garden by getting into the Model T assembly Ford of Western culture by mass getting this chemical out there as a psychic lubricant to free up that sort of, you know, white picket fence mentality of the egoic 20th century consciousness, which was the, you know, the inheritor of two world wars and all this tragedy. But essentially, to come back to it, I felt like, well, what if we once had some connection to source, which we're getting a glimpse of again through peak states of entheogens? And, you know, it's like we had this connection, and then one day in the world ages and the shifting consciousness, it was just cut. The signal was cut. Like the bill wasn't paid, the bandwidth turned off. But that emotional connection, because it's not just a mental reconnection, it's a connection of the heart and of the soul and of that oneness of the beloved, as the poet Rumi, you know, called it. And if you've ever been in love and then had that love, you know, cut or die, the heartache, like the trauma, that, and so I'm imagining this species trauma that we fell from consciousness, and that the sort of life buoy that was given to us, you know, is the ego, is this thing that helps us survive and navigate in a, you know, in a world which then became, you know, almost like the enemy, a world which became oppressive and became about survival, and it didn't have the connection to the abundance and the reciprocity of the web of life. Like being outed from the garden essentially meant that consciousness was severed. And so that ego has been necessary because we needed to survive, but it's a contractual mechanism within the human psyche or the mind, which over time, over 10,000 years or more of his story, has become like this calcified like muscle within our organism, which has now caused big problems in ourselves and in the planetary biome. So how would you define the ego, and what context do you think we actually have an egoic consciousness within?
That's a great question. Well, I can define for you what an imbalanced ego looks like. And an imbalanced ego looks like solipsism. It looks like thinking only of the self and questioning the reality of everything else, and objectification of nature, objectification of others, the obsessive need to control and plan. It's fear, it's attachment. That's the imbalanced ego. I think the healthy ego is something that's emerging now through the great work of people who are on the medicine path and other paths of awakening. I think it's what we're rediscovering. And I think what the healthy ego looks like is a self that is in awe of the great mystery and humbled by it, and a self that cares for all other living beings, and a self that can have enough individuation to function and to enjoy this gift of life, but not so much that we're denying the reality and the beingness and the consciousness of all of the other wonderful creatures around us.
Well, and it comes from that relationship of knowing that we are reconnected. It's like that's why I think the ego is a symptom of trauma, because it's all about disconnection. And the more we reconnect through whatever modality that is, the more we open up, the more we feel our innate connection to others, to other species, to nature, to the whole universe. And sometimes on entheogens that can be incredibly powerful and profound. That feeling of reconnection, this is why they call them ego dissolving. When the ego dissolves, the drop rejoins the ocean to whatever degree, and we reconnect. But that resensitizing, it seems to be, it's melting, you know, this ice thaw of history, of like 10, 12,000 years of this historical, egoic, frozen, locked in, traumatized, you know, calcified protection mechanism.
Yes, I love that. And, you know, I think that what we need right now, what the planet really needs right now, is people that are in a, on an inner state, on an inner level, in deep connection with Pachamama, with the earth, and with all of the beings on the earth, and in a deep, respectful, and loving, and awe-filled, and humble relationship. Because I look at these incredible beings, the plants especially, but also, of course, the other medicines, all of the medicines, the toad, the frog, and so forth, as teachers, as holding higher vibrational frequencies than we humans are able to do, and as wise and really as older creatures than we are, and is more deeply connected at this time, at least, than most of us are.
You know what? You know what? That's so true. And again, the egoic perspective, like we've seen all of history, all of our record books, all of our thinking, we're looking out. It's like when the first telescopes, we're looking out into the universe. We're looking out into the world, but we're not looking within, and we're not looking within to the other species to connect. But when we do, we sort of realize it's one macro organism, you know? And this is why I'm really coming around to this meme that's coming through at the moment for me about the planetary biome. That, you know, if we look at our own biome, which has 7 trillion microorganisms, something ridiculous like 97% of our DNA is actually these microorganisms, which aren't us, but we can't live without. We're a colony organism. So the planet herself in macrocosm is also a colony organism, and we're just one strand within it. And cooperatively, those strands collectively work together to distribute the energy in the web of life, to transform, to create, you know, light into sugars, sugars into all these other, you know, complicated things. Like everything builds up from that. But all of it is this engine of creation, which must be looked at as a whole, you know, holos in this sense. And the more we start to look at it from that perspective, it's like, how can we slot in, and what's the larger rhythm and the larger purpose of slotting into that planetary biome?
Yes. And I think that working with these medicines is so powerful because, as you've said, we're creating these pathways for the medicines to work through us so that we can reach these same frequencies that they bring with us, and so that we can have a deeper connection to the earth. And I think that in order to see the planetary healing ecologically and in all other ways that we'd like to see, we have to create that potential on the internal landscape, because it is a dream world. And so everything that we experience in the external or as external really is just a reflection of the dream within. And so as we do this work of deeply connecting and respecting the earth through the medicine and listening to the earth and letting the earth be our mother, really, and our teacher, and recognizing how humble we need to be, how we need to, I think, serve the earth and serve the other beings instead of using the earth and using the other beings only for our own, you know, enjoyment, and looking at ourselves as part of, like you said, of that biome, because the ego imbalance that we're seeing in humanity has created such distress for the planet, because humanity is looking at nature as an object, as a thing, and it's not humble enough. It's not recognizing that these creatures all around us are magical and are incredibly wise. And if you meditate with them, even if you're not working with an entheogen at the moment, they can teach so much. They can give so many gifts. For example, I've experienced different animal medicines coming into my life through synchronicity and then gifting me abilities and activations and things like that. For example, the hawk. Excuse me, came forward. I start to find dead hawks on my nature walks and even just like on the road and things like that. And I was wondering, what is this? You know, what is this all about? And over time, I discovered the hawk medicine is about seeing patterns. I began to see patterns, for example, in my work as an intuitive healer, really clearly and easily, as if it was obvious and light, you know, clear as day. I would connect things that I never maybe would have connected before. And with the frog medicine, with combo, it has been about surrender. It has been about acceptance. And, you know, and we could go on, right? But so all of these different animals and plants in the earth have medicines and teachings for us. All of the plants, not just the psychoactive plants, have a spirit and a teaching, I feel, and I've experienced.
I
and
agree.
I think we need to come back to that.
I think that the strands in the biome is a really good anchoring idea. Because it's like, as you say, that even the spirits in these species, they can share wisdom for us, because they can hold that vibration because they're not human, right? So when you're in right. the Amazonian tradition and the curanderos there do dietas for years, like literally years, it's to purify, which we mentioned earlier, the purification thing, which I'd like to go back to. But this idea by purifying, we're refining our vibration so they believe they can hear and connect to the signals of nature, like the they can hear the mind of nature and the plants. And, you know, Stephen Beyer had this great book he called Singing to the Plants. And it's like this whole idea that the Amazonian, you know, tradition is that they're purified enough to connect not just to ayahuasca, but to the web of life and to Pachamama and hear the call. And within that, yeah. you can get the gifts of the pure vibration of the songs of the Icaros, or the, like the vibrational codes of the plants, so their energy can transmit to you if you're pure enough to hold that song and that gift. And the idea is yeah. we can't hold that purity of level of vibration all the time because we're not plants, we're humans, and we're going along having a human experience. But if we start to cleanse and to open and to walk on this medicine path, we start to realize that we reconnect, we resensitize, we rejoin the web of life as an active participant, and in this interdependence, this, you know, this sense of that we are all one, and we can be in partnership with the other spiritual beings who can then impart their wisdom for us. And it, so it is like this, you know, interspecies samadhi mesh network is another one of my phrases, but it's like we're all becoming stronger yeah. when we plug back into the web of life collectively.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I'd like to share with you, I have experienced what you're talking about with Icaros. So combo is a very difficult experience. You're sitting with this. The first step is you fasted 12 hours and it's usually done in the morning. So that's not too hard. And then you're sitting down and you're asked to drink 3 liters of water within 10 minutes, which is very uncomfortable, really, really uncomfortable. And you want to throw up even yeah. just from that. Have you done combo?
Oh, yeah. Well, we only do 2 liters of water. You're saying you do three? I want to purge more than I've ever wanted to purge on ayahuasca just from drinking the water before I do the combo.
Exactly. So then you're experiencing that, and then you're getting burned on your skin, which hurts. And then the actual medicine is being applied to your skin, and then your heart is racing, your body is swelling up. You know, you may have issues like I've had difficulty breathing with it. And it feels horrible when it's going through your system at first, right? There's that feeling of like nausea, but also pain and achiness. It's like having a nasty flu.
You know, I might not have shared this on a podcast because it happened many years ago in my first Cambo experience. I had like 7 points. I had the 2 liters of water, I had 7 points. And then I feel in my belly, you know, with this inky type of metallic diffuse spreading throughout my system, which increases in heat. And then I feel sick. I feel totally poisoned. I feel like I want to die. And as it increased in intensity, I felt like I was a dog dying in a ditch. And if I could have just like snapped my neck, I would have done it happily. Like that's how bad it felt to be that sick. But then I also realized that's bringing out the poison and the toxins and the sickness within me as well.
Yes, yes. And so then you go through that experience where you throw up, which is so cathartic, and you're throwing up the water that you drank, but it contains, like you said, the toxins within your organs that the frog is intelligently purging. And there is a feeling of the intelligence of the frog moving through you, which is very interesting. And you know, that experience lasts about a half an hour to an hour. And at the end of it, you have a bucket of purge. And depending on the color of the purge, it corresponds to different emotions that you're releasing, as well as different organ
systems. Oh, really? I didn't know that. I thought it was like what you, you know, one of the, I guess, goals is like the yellow bile duct to clean out the liver.
Mm-hmm.
There are other colors as well?
There's other colors, yeah. I think, I'm not remembering if the gallbladder is yellow or green. I get confused with the liver and the gallbladder right now, but one of them is yellow and one of them is green. And if it's the gallbladder, you're purging indecisiveness. If it's the liver, you're purging anger and frustration. If it's clear and frothy and foamy, as it often was for me, that's and mucusy, then you're purging from your lungs, and that's grief. And that's based on the idea of Chinese medicine. Chinese medicine has the system correlating the organs with the different emotions. Because all disease, from a holistic perspective, originates as energy, and then that energy can be emotional energy that's suppressed, and then eventually it solidifies and becomes cancers and imbalances and other things in the body, a disease in the body. But it starts as energy and it starts as emotion. So combo is really powerful in that it cleanses you physically, emotionally, energetically, spiritually, just in so many different ways. Well, so I want to share with you. So this is a process I had to go through. I say had to go through because I was being called, but I'm really glad I went through it because every time I did it, I received so many gifts from the experience and so much relief. Well, then I had gotten this intuitive hit, like I only need to do 33. And then shortly after I did the 33, like 6 weeks later or so, I started seeing frogs again, and I started to have a wave of emotion coming up within me that was like needing to come out in some way. And I thought, wow, am I being called again? And I checked with my practitioner, and she said that she thought I was. So I sat with her, and my friend went first, and I watched my friend get burns. This woman is amazing in what she will, in her bravery. She wanted to clear her heart chakra. So she had the burns placed on her chest, on her heart, which is really painful. And I watched her go through that painful experience. And then it was my turn. And I started to drink the water. And I said to my practitioner, you know, I don't think I have the resolve to actually go through with this, but I have an idea. I said to her, what do you think if we were to just have you sing the Icaros, because she sings medicine songs to combo, and I just drink the water. Do you think that would be sufficient? Do you think I could do that? Because I know, like you said, in the Amazon, there's stories of people doing that with all kinds of medicines, but it's a vibration. It ultimately, medicine is a vibration. The physical aspect of the medicine is the densest form of that vibration, but it comes to you as a spirit. And the practitioner, she said, yes, she did divination. She said, yes, you could do it. And part of me was like a little skeptical. Like, am I really going to do it? Am I just going to throw up clear water? And like, you know, am I just wimping out? I wasn't sure, but she started to sing the songs, and I felt the presence of the frog with me, and I could feel it. Like, you know, you can feel it moving through your body, scanning your body and purging your organs. I felt that. And I actually did throw up different colors. So I knew that I didn't just purge water. It really happened. And I did feel that relief, that same relief that I'm used to feeling after the physical medicine. So I have experienced that. And I have experienced this also with ayahuasca. I felt called to work with her at a certain point, and wasn't able to make it happen logistically at the very last minute. And yet I could see the plant spirit with me when I would look in the mirror. I could see her vibration. I could hear this tone in my ear that she was with me. And I was so confused. Like, why am I on this diet? Why am I making offerings to the plant? And why do I feel like I'm going to do an ayahuasca ceremony? Yet logistically, I couldn't afford to do it. And it kind of came through at the last moment that I wasn't going to. So I was really confused, but I stayed on the diet. And I had this experience where it was very interesting. It was like I was walking in a dream for a couple of days. For the exact period of time that I would have been in the ceremony, I experienced the plant like teaching me, just like she would in ceremony. And it was really fascinating. And it was just really interesting. So I've experienced that. And I was listening to the Icaros to help, again, to activate the vibration of that, of the medicine, of the frequency. So for me, diet is the absolute key. If I'm not on a very strict diet, it is hard for me to have personally that level of connection with the spirits. It's like night and day, actually. And I find the most important thing to be aware of, and many people don't know this, is like sugar content, and including in just things like grains and root vegetables, the sugar. It's like, I think, I don't know how much people may be familiar, you may be familiar with the candida problem, but candida is huge. Candida is essentially, it's the yeasty organisms inside of our guts that always is there, but often in our culture, and almost everybody, is completely out of balance because we eat too many carby foods, and because we take antibiotics and things like that, which I did in my childhood quite a lot, and because, you know, our culture is really big on drinking and things like that, it creates disharmonies. And the candida, actually, I think of as, it's kind of like a demon. It can become like a demon because it can start to affect your thoughts, can start to affect your moods and make you anxious and negative, and it blocks your intuition, I find, as well. So it's really interesting. The foods that feed it, like I said, are carby foods. So when I do the diet preparing, I do basically a ketogenic diet where I have almost no carbohydrates, and I'm really just doing like juices and steamed vegetables and things like that. And I find that it makes a tremendous difference within about 3 days. It's really powerful. I notice that candida seems, when I can tell within myself from my experiences, that when it's very active, I can't really hear my intuition very well. So I suspect that many of us have capacities that we're not aware of just because of our diets.
Okay, sorry.
Did I lose you?
There's a condition called toxoplasmosis, which is a thing mice get. It's a virus, and it impels them to give themselves up to cats to then pass along the food chain, the virus, right? And so it totally takes control of the organism, and you know it's totally true that this approach and these things we carry within us motivate us and are their own life forms that are, you know, have their own agendas. And you know, this brings up for me that whole next step. I mean, a lot of this research, I've been looking into different spiritual traditions of what to do after the peak entheogenic experience, which a lot of these cultures, they say, well, you purify. And this is what they say in the Amazon as well. It's the purification rituals. So how do we maximize the gains and the intelligence and the wisdom we gain from the entheogenic experiences? Just like in the jungle, you know, we remain on either dietas, whether that's mental dietas or physical dietas, but we purify the body to then accept the gains and to move forward on the path. So what do you think? We've talked a bit about the purification, but that seems to be the next level. I mean, the West is so identified with psychedelics still. They're almost sort of treating entheogens as psychedelics. And obviously psychedelics came from Psyche, the Greek goddess of the mind, and it had such a, you know, powerful mental activity, things like mescaline and LSD. But there's this whole spiritual component and relationship and energetic, which I think is the next phase of Western shamanic integration, which is realizing it's a spiritual path, and it involves, you know, the peak, beyond the peak experience, the integration is about the purification as the next step.
Yes, totally. And also listening to the teachings and the wisdom that we got in the ceremony from the medicine. I guess it depends on which medicine you're working with. Some of them, maybe it's not a specific message that you're getting, but sometimes it is. So I think listening and integrating and applying the messages that we get. And with, for example, ayahuasca, I've seen, you know, many people look to it to be the end in itself of a cure. And it is absolutely a healing and a medicine and transformative. Yet traditionally, and correct me if I'm wrong, from what I've read, ayahuasca is really a diagnostic tool. The shaman would take ayahuasca to discover what in the client or patient needed to heal and what the cause of
exactly.
the illness was,
yep.
right? And then do a shamanic healing. So for myself, that's often what that medicine has shown me is, oh, here's this thing you didn't know about from when you were in the womb that is affecting you, you know, and then what, right? So, or here's this thing from early childhood that you forgot about, but because it was from when you were pre-verbal and you couldn't possibly remember. So she'll show me, she'll diagnose for me a particular issue. But then I think it is really important and valuable to go to shamanic healers or intuitive healers, or there's many ways, but essentially to move the energy and to bring love, healing, and awareness to the aspects of ourselves that are calling out for love. Because we are still our inner child, you know, we are still that child, the fetus in the womb that's developing just as we are our future selves. It's just, we're so connected. And so we need to bring love and to release the pains and transmute the energies of all aspects of ourselves. We're so much more than just the conscious mind. So
exactly.
Yes, absolutely. Physical purification is so important, but so is emotional purification and energetic purification.
Well, that's it. I mean, more, you know, basically the toad and the very powerful initiation of the non-dual state and the ego, the full ego death, you know, and rebirth and rejoining the source consciousness has led me to looking into, you know, the Vedic traditions and their maps. I'm reading this great book on the Upanishads, a translation from 1935, and it's just full of all this information and about how, you know, essentially in these cultures and traditions and their relationship with source, it all comes back to source. But it's like we have an egoic individuality and a presence, but we have all these other capacities beyond the intellect and the mind. We have the intuition, we have the imagination, we have the you know, emotional connection, which is part of the intuition. It's like we've denuded and shut down the full capacity of our operating system, and it seems like we're still treating the entheogens as a psychedelic, as a mind thing, when what they're really revealing in their holistic totality is the mind-body-spirit and how all of it needs to be purged of all the traumas and all the things we've been holding on to. And when we do, as you said before, we clean our systems and we have the innate divine blueprint to connect to divine source and to receive the signal. That's what the plants are doing, you know. That's why the animals are still in a source consciousness and not an egoic consciousness to the degree we are, is that we have the capacity within us to reconnect to the full bandwidth, the full spectrum consciousness. As we go on this path of medicines and healing, we are the medicine. The medicine is within us. We are divine creatures. We have this capacity. We've just forgotten how to use it.
I love that. And, you know, I think as well about what my goal is in, on my path right now is really to become dreamed by my higher self, dreamed by source. I want to really release my desires, my egoic self, to the extent that I can become a conduit. And that's what I think we all really could do. And I almost want to use the word should do. I think that in order for the planet to heal at this point and to not die, I think we need an act of divine intervention. I don't think it's going to come from somebody having a good idea. Yes, I mean, there will be many good ideas, and there are many good ideas for sustainable ways to do things, and they're great, but they can't be applied. They can't thrive in the current ecosystem that's existing on an emotional and energetic level within the consciousness of humanity. So we have to shift, and we have to become within humanity conduits for source consciousness, so that humanity can become, as an organism, resonant with the solutions, with these positive solutions, but also for miracles. I think we need actual miracles.
Uh-huh.
I think though
uh-huh.
that it is.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
yeah. And I think we're capable. And I think that the plant medicines work miracles on us, and the animal medicines, the toad and so forth, they're all working miracles. And so I think the extent to which we can allow them to work through us is the extent to which we can help heal the planet and source consciousness as a whole as well. And the frequencies, the higher frequencies of love and peace and compassion,
I totally resonate with everything you're saying. It's beautiful to hear another Mira in Lakesh, sister, in that. And you know what I would say is that I believe there was this Philip K. Dick phrase, the Divine Invasion, as one of his books. And, you know, he had this contact experience with what he called Valis, the vast active living intelligent system, which was, you know, a more sci-fi modern way to put a label on the logos or the source or the force or, you know, the big G-O-D thing. But it is a vast active living intelligent system underpinning everything in us as well. And I would say that it's not a divine invasion, it's an infusion, right? Mm. And it comes at a time in the organism when it's time to bud. And when it's time to bloom and to blossom, and that seems to be the time in the human species. We're seeing it in the emergency, the planetary emergency, which has been catalyzed largely through our egoic retraction from the planet and our consumption of all resources and our, you know, our total messing up of the planetary biosphere. But in that process, there's this process of emergence that is underway. And it seems to me to be that that's exactly what is happening. And we're still even in that degree of awareness. Sometimes we look upon it as, well, we're doing it to rejoin source, but actually it's an active process that's part of the plan that source is unfolding as we speak. And it's like all we have to do is open to it and trust our intuition when it feels like it's right, like you do in ceremony and ayahuasca or other things. You know when it feels wrong or right or what's sort of happening on an intuitive emotional level, and you open and trust and let go and surrender and allow the process to happen. And funnily enough, this is what the great Upanishads have been saying in the translation I'm reading, that process is part of the spiritual wisdom that they have felt and have left the map gaps and the understandings of. And as we do it more and more, they have this term, the buddhi, B-U-D-D-H-I. It's like this active intelligence of the divine source that's always within us. As it starts to bud and blossom and manifest, there's layers to it and there's a process for it, and we become less egoic in the centralization of the egoic function. The ego is always going to be there, but it's being subsumed back into the rest of the operating system with the intellect, the intuition, the imagination, and the other capacities to be more holistic. And as we do so, it's making more room for that divine principle to be active and an interdependent participant with us, because it is us, and we start to identify with that and to trust that more as well. I mean, it's beautiful.
I love everything you just said. I wonder, would you be interested in a little diversion about karma?
Give it to me. We've got 6 good minutes. So let's, what's the karmic repercussions of this?
Yes. Well, I just want to say that in my experience, from what I've seen in myself experiencing repeating patterns with different people in different situations and with my clients and so forth, what I've experienced is, like, that's what I will call karma, is difficulties. I'm thinking of negative karma here, but difficulties that are arising in sort of a pattern way that are also blockages. And that you're getting an experience over and over that's dissatisfying and upsetting and difficult, as opposed to empowering. I think that humanity at this time is being given an opportunity to get off the wheel of karma, because we are, as you're saying, emerging into something completely new that we've never been before. And I think in order to really open up to that full bandwidth of that potential for creative capacity that we get to participate in, we need to clear our karma. And we do that through full acceptance of life and through looking, of course, for the spiritual lessons in each difficulty and for what virtue we can cultivate when faced with any particular challenge or obstacle, but also through this purification work that's so important. Kambo is a karma clearer. And so are all of the other medicines, I think. They all have that potential in different ways. But it's about, you know, really clearing these wounds that keep magnetizing these unresolved issues to us. It's about really resolving them so that we can become something more and have a completely different experience on this planet for our own good and for the good of the planet too.
Well, you sold me. That's what I believe is happening. Okay, maybe this is a thing to wind up on. It's like, so if we believe this, if we feel this, and, you know, I share a lot of my thinking and my downloads and my own mapping of trying to piece it together on my spiritual journey, but I'm not saying it's the truth with a capital T. I'm saying that I deeply resonate with it, and I find other people that seem to be on this path or similar enough paths that it's mapping the journey together. So, you know, everyone's got to look into it in their own way and they're in their own truth, because you can't force someone to awaken. It's like, you know, people have to come to that process because they have their own picture pattern puzzle that needs unlocking, their own wounds and traumas and contraction and acceptance and karmic load. And, you know, we're all carrying a lot. And it's like, it's a gentle, delicate, sometimes, you know, traumatic experience of awakening. But if we do become more aware of this dynamic going on, what do you think then, how do we stop ourselves from becoming ego-aggrandized? Like, there's a lot of dialogue at the moment in the larger psychedelic entheogenic community around, you know, different commentators, you know, that potentially we all have these ego-dissolving experiences, but we know the ego can bounce back even stronger than ever, sometimes in service to the cause, sometimes in service to the ego in service to the cause. And, you know, I want to draw attention to the fact that I am a commentator and I have an ego, and I understand that sometimes I'm projecting or I'm putting my message out, and I can't criticize anyone else because they are another me. So we all dealing with our egos in this shamanic psychedelic community. What do you think, though, is the best way to do that responsibly?
That's a great point. Absolutely. You know, I think that trauma is the gift of opening, is a gift that can be, I look at it like, you know, the more trauma we've experienced, the bigger our ego tends to be. And also, the more trauma we've experienced, the more potential we have to transform all of that density into light. So the ego and the imbalances of the ego are really just raw material for transformation into our higher selves. That's how I look at it. And I think that we need to have compassion for ourselves because there's sometimes a standard of perfection put upon commentators and teachers that nobody can reach because they're still human, you know? And so I think we need to have compassion for those people who are putting themselves out there, but then also those of us who are speaking, we need to hold ourselves accountable and keep looking to transmute whenever we see ourselves acting in a way that's a little too self-important or projecting or doing things like that. We just need to stay present and ask ourselves, what am I feeling? What is this reminding me of from the past? What is this really about? And then look to divine intervention, whatever form you like. Like I said, I like intuitive healing, but the medicines are another way. There's breath work. There's all kinds of different ways. We need to transmute those energies. That's the key. Because those energies are density for the most part. And that's not to demonize density. Everything serves, right? Everything is good fertilizer for the flowering. But we need to seek to transmute whenever it arises and look at when somebody projects or when we see somebody acting out of their ego, we can really just look with compassion and see, oh, this person must have a desire to be seen that's not resolved from childhood or something. And just be compassionate to that. And then hopefully that person also has the awareness or people around them, maybe if they don't, to suggest maybe some transformation is needed. And it's okay because we're all students and we're all evolving, right?
Aho, aho. Awesome. So, I agree. That's the purification. And then how do you think the integration of that egoic subsummation into the full operating system of the Gaian human? What do you think the future holds for the role of the ego in a galactivated individual?
Well, I love that question. I got inspired a lot by Yogananda and through Kriya Yoga and his teachings, Paramahansa Yogananda, that book, Autobiography of a Yogi, which I love. And there's another book, Daughters of the Goddess, which is also about women yogis in particular, because his book is pretty specifically about men. And I love those two books because they show what it's like at this really high level of spiritual development. Where you're really very much one with source consciousness, and miracles are just common. It's just what happens. People are telepathic. People are in two places at once at the same time. People do live sometimes completely in bliss states. All of this exciting stuff is completely real and already has happened. And I look to those as particular models for one possibility. But I think it's very possible that we're going to find ourselves more connected to each other. I think telepathy is very likely. It already exists. I've already experienced it in ceremony, as I'm sure many other people have. Maybe you have too. So I think we can look forward to just a more miraculous, easy, and effortless existence because when we're using the mind and the ego to accomplish things, it's much slower and less efficient than when we allow synchronicity and magic and miracles to lead the way. And I think if we can trust, as you say, the divine plan, I think it's leading to some really exciting things, some things that we've never imagined and I couldn't possibly imagine and won't know until we see it. Because what we're looking at really is a higher vibration of humanity and the earth in balance with a higher vibration of humanity, a more awakened humanity on a larger scale than has ever happened before. Because there's so many more people than have ever been on the earth before. So the potential is enormous.
And that's the truth. Yeah, I believe. Well, that's a truth, you know. There's a great potential, and there's a great remembrance, and there's a great reunification, and a great joy in coming back, not just to the garden, but the web of life and source consciousness. And it seems like that's the full bandwidth, the full capacity, the fully activated human being, you know, that golden age is essentially, hopefully, just around the corner if we can embody and live that truth.
I really believe it is just around the corner because the mirror is so powerful. Just seeing that everybody in our lives is completely a direct reflection of our inner world is so powerful in our inner vibrational state. What's going to happen when we have tons of people walking around who've completely worked out their traumas? What's going to happen when we have all these people holding frequencies of love and peace? What is the mirror of the world on a broader scale going to look like? If that's what it's like on our individual levels, I think that if we want to heal the world, we have to heal ourselves and become those pure, more pure and inner mirrors that are connected to divinity that are connected to ourselves, that are connected to, as you say, you know, the web of life. I think that's going to be the work, is getting to that place as much as we can on an ongoing, in an ongoing and intentional way, and then seeing what the external mirror brings to us. And I can say, you know, on a personal level, I've experienced through this work of transformation, of inner transformation, how my external experiences shift and change in a really amazing way. It's been very profound and dramatic. I'd love to see that happen on a societal scale.
Well, I totally concur. And I think that's the thing. We're still looking at medicine culture at the moment as like this peak experience, or people are getting healed and releasing things. But that's the first step of this reunification, of then realizing and activating the medicine within us and the purification and the connection. And that, you know, it's going to be very interesting as more and more people are fully healed and remain integral and purified to create that critical mass in people that can hold this space moving forward. So let's cross our fingers, let's trust, let's open our hearts, and let's walk that path together. So thank you so much, Tara Rose. This has been an amazing discussion on egos and entheogens. And how can people find more information about you?
Well, you can go to my YouTube channel, Tara Rose Sacred Medicine, and I'm on Instagram at Intuitive Tara Rose. And yeah, I'm looking forward to connecting more with anybody who feels resonant and like-minded with what I've had to say, absolutely, and this discussion and your wonderful podcast. Thank you.
Well, thank you for being a guest on In a Perfect World, one human at a time, changing the world. Thank you so much. Thanks to all the listeners. And yeah, let's be beautiful out there. Aloha.
Aloha.